Hello, Sunday Night's Main Event listeners. Jason Agnew here, and we've got one of our podcasts that we do on a weekly basis for you coming up next. It is a free sample of The Old Fucks. Yeah, that's right. So it's All Elite Weekly, but it's my longtime co-host, Dan the Mouth Lavransky, along with his partner, Joe Aguinaldo. They are The Old Fucks parodying The Young Bucks, and they're giving you a Dynamite review. So remember, each and every week, these guys get together to review Dynamite. To get this podcast every week, just sign up at patreon.com/SNMEradio. You'll get this show and get daily shows covering the world of pro wrestling. So with that in mind, let's get into it. Dan Lavransky, Joe Aguinaldo, they are The Old Fucks reviewing Dynamite.
This show is dedicated to those who sacrificed for our freedoms. For myself and Dan Lavransky, thank you.
Yes, there it is, ladies and gentlemen. It's all laid out for you. It is indeed the final countdown. Dan the Mouth Lavransky, Joe Aguinaldo, collectively known as the Old Fox, here once again to talk about AEW Dynamite, the final show, final episode of Dynamite before the big pay-per-view. We have Full Gear this weekend, Saturday night. And this is it. This was the big go-home show. Well, we still have Rampage on Friday, but one-hour show. I can't expect it's going to have a lot of oomph. This is kind of the one. This is like the one everybody expects, I think, to be the big go-home show. So let's go through it. Lots of great stuff in this. Joe, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Had the day off. And I cleaned the house. That's what I did. So
now you won't have to do it on Saturday.
Yes, and that was the plan. So quite literally, I'm gonna say about a minute before I called you, I just finished mopping the floor and putting everything away. I still have a couple of things to finish off on the back end, but for the most part, the house is done. There you go. That's what I did on my day off. So there, awesome. There it is.
Awesome. Well, I was working, and straight from work, I went to band practice and had 3 hours of band practice. And then I had to spend 40 minutes riding against the wind. Where I was coming from to where I was going was pretty well a straight line. So the wind was literally in my face the entire 40 minutes. Like, even the last crawling minutes as I get to my house, I'm just like, the wind was like, it's really strongly coming out of the east here.
Yeah, dude, when I used to be like hot and heavy into like marathon running and stuff or distance running, like I didn't mind running in the cold weather. I didn't mind running in the really hot weather, but I hated running in the wind, against the wind. I couldn't stand
it.
It's the worst, man.
Joe, I'm exactly the same as you. Hot, dude, you know, I ride my bike all year round. I don't
care. Yeah, pretty much.
That's right. Uh-huh. So I'm the exact same, but wind, it's like, fuck off. I hate it. It's so bad. And plus, dude, band practice. I'm the drummer, for those of you that might not know. I'm the drummer in the band. I'm playing the drums for 3 hours, and then I got to drive against the headwind for another friggin' hour. I'm like,
as an ex-drummer, I get that, man, because after band practice, you know, everyone's kind of like, oh, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I want to sleep. I'm tired. Like, I've been pounding the drums for 3 hours. So
yeah, it's definitely a different thing than from the rest of the band, for sure. Okay, let's get into this. Like I said, go-home show, big pay-per-view on the weekend. By the way, those of you that are listening to this, those of you that are listening to this for free, because this is the one that we're pushing here this week to give you an example of what you can get if you subscribe to the Sunday Night's Main Event Patreon. It's really, really inexpensive, and you get a show every day, basically. And so this is Joe and I reviewing AEW and Dynamite. So if you like what you hear on this one, sign up to the Patreon. It's super inexpensive. And you get a whole ton of stuff. And you even get stuff outside of our wrestling stuff. You get some of Jay's trivia stuff that he does on the radio and other stuff he does. You also get my music show that I do as well. So all kinds of good stuff in there.
Yep, just go to patreon.com/snmeradio and sign up, and it's good value for your buck.
It is. All the podcasts are really fun to listen to, and we're covering all the big stuff. We got Raw covered, we got SmackDown covered, we got Dynamite, Rampage, NXT. So and even then Bam, and then Bam,
covers everything else.
Bam covers everything else. So
yeah, Boris and Matt do a great job on that podcast. So shout out to Boris and again, if you want to hear, like they did, like one of their shows, they did like a really quick blitz of the, I think it was like 3 or 4 nights of the G1. Just, you know, this match happened, but lots of stuff going on in their podcast. And you look, if you're into football, if you're into baseball,
exactly,
like these guys talk about everything. They seem to know a little bit about everything. So
yeah,
you know,
they're diehards. They love sport in the strictest sense, right?
Dude, they covered Bound for Glory. Like Boris writes for like for like he writes ROH stuff. Like these guys are all over the place.
And then all the other stuff too, the football. Like I wouldn't be surprised if these guys are covering Swamp Buggy Racing. Like I can totally see them. Boris, how about some Swamp Buggy Racing?
Yeah, or Bocce Ball or something like that. Boris, if you're listening, there's the gauntlet. Throw it down for you, bud.
There you go. All right. So, yeah, let's get into this here then and get through this Dynamite show. Enough of the tomfoolery. The show got off to a super strong start. And the other reason I wanted to play Final Countdown off the top, Bryan Danielson started the show against Rocky Romero. You know what my first note is here, Joe?
What's that?
I can't believe I just typed Rocky Romero.
Well, did you see any of the like the Twitter stuff earlier in the day? Because basically,
I'm not on Twitter, right?
Okay, like, and I don't remember exactly, but basically, Okada said that either like one of the best friends was part of Chaos, so he, you know, basically the best friends are part of Chaos, which I guess helped explain why Orange Cassidy was in Rocky Romero's corner. Right. But there was a lot. You must notice that there was like during the commentary, there's a ton of NJPW references, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah, and the fact that there were that many references, like, they talked about Okada so much. Like, you got to think these guys are coming in. They've got to be. I can't believe they would just bandy the names around like that, and they're not coming in to do something. So, yeah.
Well, and think about it, too. Rocky Romero is one of the office guys. So, yes. You know what I mean? Like it'd be different if, like, I don't know, they threw in a young lion, right? That'd be one thing. But the fact that you've got Rocky Romero, who's, you know, who's kind of up there in terms of like booking and talent and stuff. I, again, not trying to read too much into it, but that to me is a good sign, right?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting over the next little while, because they really did talk about it a lot, and I can't see it not happening when they talked about it that much. So yeah, the best friends came out with Rocky, Excalibur, and all of them explained that they're members of Chaos now, which is Okada's group. So that's why they're here with Rocky. They all went to the back except for Orange. He stayed out there. They played up the history that Romero and Danielson have from the New Japan Dojo, which I thought was really great. Again, AEW never afraid to acknowledge history. This was great. I mean, this was an excellent match. They shook hands off the top. The crowd was chanting for Brian right out of the gate. I loved how the commentators talked about this could be a real risk for Brian because he's got the big match with Miro at the pay-per-view. So he was kind of like maybe pushing his luck here. As you'd expect, lots of mat wrestling holds. Orange distracts Brian at one point. Rocky does a dive to the outside. Rocky kind of tries to work the left shoulder of Danielson. That's what he seems to be after. There was one spot where Brian had Rocky down in the corner and he was giving him chops and kicks. And the crowd screamed to every chop and every kick. Like, they're just like, yeah, move, yeah. They're just so into it while he was pounding on Rocky in the corner. Brian also did the Romero special, which was really cool. The surfboard. They showed Matt Hardy at ringside getting in Orange Cassidy's face. Romero got some great kicks in on Brian as well that were really tough and stiff. He did a great Hurricanrana off the steps on the outside. He also did the running sliced bread for a near fall. Brian tried to do a suplex up the top. Rocky reversed it in midair and got a near fall. That was a pretty neat spot. Rocky kept going for the arm bar, but at one point Brian lifted him up and did that classic kind of power bomb off it to break it. Rocky just basically kept trying for the Gucci Katami, the arm bar, and Brian would get out of it every time. Rocky tried for the sliced bread again, but Brian got out of it and then got on top of him and just stomped on him, and then eventually grabbed his knee and got it in the submission hold that we haven't seen before. And Rocky tapped out right away. Like, it looked like he was going for the LaBelle lock, but it was this knee submission thing, and Rocky tapped out. And it was great. The announcers actually talked about how Brian has all these different finishers. So they're actually educating us to a guy having more than one finisher, which is very much a Japanese style, right? All the guys have more than one finisher. So Rocky taps out. I loved it. I thought it was a great opening match, and all these hints of a bigger relationship with New Japan. I was grinning pretty big by the end of this match.
Oh yeah. Not only were they talking about Bryan Danielson, you know, having all these submission moves, but I love that. Like, I think it was Excalibur specifically was saying that, that Rocky Romero was kind of the master of arm submissions, which made the whole, you know, every time he tried to get for that cross arm breaker, it was like, oh, that's his move, right? And the one part of the match that I really, really liked was the end when they were both going for submissions. So Danielson was going for leg sub, and then Romero would get the cross arm breaker, and then Danielson reversed and got an ankle lock, but then Romero got another arm breaker. You know what I mean? Like, I love wrestling like that. It's actually a rather large critique, but it's not about the match itself. It was like when I saw Matt Hardy, sort of jawing with Orange Cassidy, I'll admit, I was like, really, really? Are we, this is coming on again? And I was so pissed off when I saw that.
I'm going to call nitpicking on that, Joe. Come on. I mean, it was like 2 seconds of the whole experience, and it's not like it took you away. Did it actually took you out of the match that much?
It didn't take me out of the match. It bothered me because
you're more burnt out on that, I think.
Yeah, I already didn't like that. So the fact that they kept going back to Matt Hardy, I'm like, come on, really? Like, we've got an amazing match going on, and I get that you have to tell story, but you have to tell story with Matt freaking Hardy. Like, enough of this guy already.
All right. There you go. Well said. It did not bother me as much, Joe, probably because I was just enjoying the match so much that I really didn't care about that. And that whole thing doesn't bother me as much as it bugs you. But anyways, great opening match. And some people might say, well, but yeah, what does that have to do with the go home? Well, it really just shows you that one of the guys going into the match is in tip top shape. He's ready to take on someone with Miro. So I had no problem with that. I thought it was a good opening match. Okay, so we went to break after that. We come back. Tony's in the ring. Here's this segment. Now, this was a strong go-home show segment in the traditional sense, for sure. This was fantastic. Tony's in the ring. He introduces the Inner Circle. They get out there. They're on the ramp. They're kind of just watching the audience sing along to the Jericho song and really enjoying it. And before anything can happen, Lambert and American's top team, they just come wailing out there. They dive on them. They beat the shit out of them. I'm starting to enjoy Lambert, the physical performer, now more than I am as a mouthpiece. He is so fantastic in this spastic role. Like, he's so much Jim Cornette and Bobby Heenan kind of rolled into one, that classic spastic kind of manager. You just want to see him get punched in the face so bad, right?
Oh, yeah, he does. He, like, for as much as like we didn't dig the sort of old man yelling at the sky thing, this was awesome. Like, he was great in this.
Again, I would say exactly, because he hardly did any talking.
Yeah, he just jumped around. He gloated. He's really good at gloating.
That's like, what I mean. You know? He's got the whole physical part down. He was absolutely great. Like, again, this is one of the stronger segments. I mean, I've always been kind of crapping on this from the beginning, but it really has gotten better and better as it went. And this segment was fantastic. So these guys come out, they're all beaten down the inner circle. The crowd's chanting, "You suck." They got huge heat on this. It was fantastic.
Oh, massive heat. It was amazing too. Like, I was like, wow.
So they start beating them all up. They throw Santana into the steel steps. Lambert and Sky set up a table in the ring. They throw Jericho back in the ring, and this was brilliant. Sky and Paige help Lambert do a powerbomb of Jericho through the table, and they even did it sloppy, further enhancing the fact that Lambert knows nothing about wrestling, and he shouldn't be in the match, but
yeah,
these guys were helping him.
So before you go any further, because I actually saw a lot of people on social media complaining about this. They're like, "Oh, that was a sloppy powerbomb."
Are you kidding? That's part of the story.
Yeah. And I'm like, it's supposed to be. Lambert's not a wrestler. He's a 62-year-old man. Yeah, he's not supposed to be able to do a powerbomb through a table. Like, it's supposed to look bad.
I thought
it was great.
I totally loved it. I'm like, oh my God, it looked crappy. You're not a wrestler.
Well,
it just makes him look like more of a dick, even,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And when he did it, he was like, yeah.
You know, oh, yeah, exactly. He's acting like awesome. he's done the greatest power bomb ever, right?
and it wasn't supposed to be a good power bomb, people. It's supposed to look like shit.
Yeah, it was brilliant. So, Sky and Paige. They help. Oh yeah, sorry. We did that. Sky does his best JR and goes, "He might be broken in half," like the Mankind Undertaker call there. And Sky says, "This is just a small piece of what we can do, and you're gonna get the whole thing at full gear." And there's a huge asshole chant. The crowd's hating these guys. And then Ethan Page takes a mic and says, "Not only will we win, but we'll make sure that Dan Lambert pins Chris Jericho." And I'm just like, oh my God, what a great line.
It was awesome.
And he goes, "That's what we'll do at the pay-per-view." He goes, "But tonight we're going to make Dan Lambert tap out Jericho." And Lambert puts Jericho into the Walls of Jericho. And this was great. Lambert yells, this was the only thing he did to kind of push the old school thing versus what AEW is now. And he puts Jericho in the Walls and he's going, "Boston," he goes, "It's called a Boston Crab, 1975, Florida Championship Wrestling, Rocky Johnson."
That was great.
When Rocky Johnson went to Florida in 1974, five or whatever he said, that's how he got over, was with the Boston Crab. So I'm like, holy shit. Like, that was fantastic. As much as I was tired of the picking on the promotion, that was a brilliant way to do it right there. This was great. This was classic heels. Just obliterate the baby faces before the match. Lambert was great. Honestly, I guess depending on how people feel and how they see it, but maybe I guess how the reaction is at the pay-per-view. But to me, after this beatdown, this should be Inner Circle destroys them and we don't see them again ever. Like, they really should be gone. But I don't know if that's going to happen because they are so popular. But to me, honestly, they should be gone after this.
Yeah, like even for a little while. Again, unless JDS and Orlovsky have signed a contract with AEW, which I highly doubt.
We would have heard about that.
I think. Like I think at this point, the Inner Circle and Men of the Year have gotten the two wins. This to me feels like the comeuppance for the babyfaces. That said, one thing I did also want to mention when Lambert got the Walls, like, I love the fact that Sky grabbed Jericho's hand and tapped it for him. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
again,
that is
also a classic heel move. And the one thing I also noticed in this, and we've said this before, but when Paige cut that promo about, like, "Hold on, we're not going to win this Saturday. We're going to make sure Lambert pins Jericho," to me, that was like, yes, this reinforces the fact that Paige really should be pushed as a singles guy because he's really, really good.
I know. That promo was excellent. Yeah,
it was very good. Great. Like even Skies was okay. But then when Paige got on the mic, I'm like, yeah, no. Paige is a much better promo than Scorpio Sky is.
Yeah, see, that's the big question, eh? Is like, in my scenario with Lambert and them go away, what happens with Paige and Sky? Like, that's the thing. Like, what do, like, the ultimately, this should all be really about Paige and Sky.
Paige and Sky, yeah. We've talked about this, too.
How is that going to happen, though? Maybe something happens at the pay-per-view in the match that puts the focus on those two, and Lambert and his cronies disappear, and maybe it's something with Paige and Lambert against Santana and Ortiz or something, or... Like, I don't know. I want to see them get something out of this, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, and that's been kind of our biggest issue. Like, forget, old man yelling at the clouds. Forget all that stuff for a sec. Like, our primary question has always been, what does this do for Sky and Paige? And we've not seen any sort of definitive direction, like, coming out of this feud. Now, again, you're right. Something could happen. From Full Gear, but like every time we talk about this, it's always like, what's in it for Sky and Paige? And we can never answer that question. We don't even have a clue of which way they're going with it.
Yeah. And that's not good. I mean, Lambert has been great in this. I mean, Junior Dos Santos, those guys, whatever. I mean, really, they've just been kind of fixtures to back up Lambert. Lambert's been the performer, but yeah, I so want those guys. I wish they could just do something to break Sky and Paige up. They should both be singles. They shouldn't be in a tag team. It's a terrible waste.
See, that's the thing. Part of me wonders is if in fact the Inner Circle is winning, right? Like something happens where Sky and Paige.
Two.
Yeah, like that would make sense. And then it would get them going somewhere. The only other thing I can think of is kind of to your point. Is like Paige and Sky get into something serious with Santana and Ortiz, which that would also be a good program. Yeah. But again, I think Paige and Sky are kind of wasted as a tag team. And we've been saying that forever now. So,
Okay. So after this, they go to break, they come back. It's the six woman tag. So it's Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter and Rebel against Anna Jay, Ty Conti and Thunder Rosa. It's a brawl right out of the gate. All six of them just start going nuts. The heels toss the baby faces out. Eventually, they calm down, and Britt and Thunder Rosa started off. The crowd's chanting for both of them. But, man, they really do love Thunder Rosa, and, you know, rightfully so.
She's awesome, dude. Yeah, Come on.
Yeah. They tossed Anna Jay to the outside. They beat on her while the ref was distracted. They went to pick and pick. Anna Jay got the hot tag right after the break. Ty Conti got to run wild. Jamie Hayter did a backbreaker that wasn't particularly good looking. I thought it was kind of sloppy.
Oh, yeah. That was like when she did it, I was like,
yeah,
no.
Did not look good.
No.
The women were trying to keep it at a fast pace, though. Like, even though Rebel, I would say, is not the greatest wrestler of the group. She was all over this match. Like, did you notice how much Rebel was in this match?
Like, I will. Like,
I haven't seen
thing.
Her in a match this much. I don't think in AEW ever. Like, she carried a lot of this match. She was constantly running in and throwing kicks, and I'm like, you never see her in the match that much.
I will definitely give her an A for effort, but she is still.
I know
she's still sloppy,
yeah.
Right? Like, and look,
she is. So that begs my question. Why was she in the match so much?
You got me on that. Like, I mean, look, again, I respect the effort. I'll even say this about Anna Jay. I think Anna Jay is good, but Anna Jay is still not like she can't work quickly for like, okay. Remember way, way back with Britt Baker, right? One of the things that we always used to say was fundamentally she was good. But then when she tried to move too fast, it was like you could tell she wasn't quite there yet. And that's Anna Jay to me. Like, Anna Jay is good if she slows it down. But when she's in there and you got to go – when you got to go quick, that's when you see her weaknesses. And, like even with Anna Jay, she was okay. I'm not saying she was horrible. But, like, her and Rebel to me were like, ugh. Like, you guys need to stay outside a bit more.
See, and that, I mean, that kind of, and that was the finish too, wasn't it? It was Ty Conti in there with Rebel, and yeah, Ty gives her version of the DDT and pins her while Britt watched. And of course, Britt's watching from the outside. She's run out of the ring. She obviously wants nothing to do with this. So yeah, we have Ty Conti getting the pin on Rebel.
And that's probably like, so Rebel was in there to get pinned. I get that.
Yes.
But yeah, like, yeah, she was in there a lot, and there were like, like my final note on the match was okay, but sloppy. And a lot of that was because like Rebel would come in and try to do something a little too over the top. And then it would be like, nope, that didn't look good. And then like a couple times Anna Jade, like you could almost see her like thinking about the beats in her head. And I'm like, okay, if I don't normally notice that kind of stuff, and if I'm noticing that kind of stuff, it's not good. You know what I mean?
So. Maybe it was, I think it partly might have been story, because the idea that Britt's staying out of the match, and Rebel and Hayter are doing most of
Work, no, and right? And that's fine. But the other part is you didn't want to necessarily pin Hayter, because her and Thunder Rosa are like, they're a quarterfinal match. And because did you notice too that Thunder Rosa wasn't in that match as much either, right?
No,
like
most of it not at all, hardly. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Again, it was an okay match. I understand. Like, I think this was more a storyline match than it was a quote unquote work rate match.
Oh, but yeah,
I will give Britt total credit, man. Like, when Ty got the DD tie and got the pin, like, Britt sold that like $1 million. Like you said, yes. I don't want anything to do with you. Yes. She's going to the back.
Yeah, the look on her face. Well, yeah, she had the great look on her face, and she grabbed the belt and ran away quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And like I think people, like, Britt's selling over the last little while, I think, is underrated. Like, remember how she sold Abaddon? You know what I mean? Like, that's some pretty good stuff, man. So I'm totally digging Britt in this.
So after this, we go to a vignette to push the Ruby Soho versus Chris Statlander match that's in the TBS Women's Title Tournament. Ruby says she respects Statlander before she came to AEW. And she said, when I got here, you had my back right out of the gate. Statlander said that unfortunately they would end up on opposite sides of the ring. Ruby says, not that you stand between me and the TBS title. Respect doesn't mean shit. And Statlander said, the time has come and she will be the leader. So basically just a little short, quick thing to push that match on the pay-per-view.
And they let Ruby say shit in this one.
They did. She got the shit this week. Maybe that's what they're doing now. They're rationing it out. It's like, okay, all right, look, Jericho, you've had it for like months, Jericho. We're going to give some of the other guys the shit. Ruby, this week you get to say shit.
You get the shit.
So after that, we go to break. Another match. This was for a go-home show, this had a lot of matches on it. But I enjoyed it. The thing is, all except for the one we just talked about, all the rest of the matches on the show were pretty damn good. So this is Jungle Boy versus Anthony Bowen, one half of the Acclaimed, and of course Max Caster is with him. This was another good match. Caster, of course, does the rapping. He said the Acclaimed are on the mic. Jungle Boy stumbles every time he promos. You look so pathetic. I wouldn't even kiss you, even though you are my fetish. Thought that was a weird line. I think he was just trying to get a rhyme there. He said, you're so progressive. You leave your girlfriend alone with seven guys or something. It was not one of his better raps.
No. I rank that about a.
Pretty like this is where the word shit should have been dished out here, because that rap was shit.
You know what? I do think though that. Like, because he's had way better raps on
Dark
and Elevation, right?
Yeah.
But I think because of that one, the one where he got in trouble, I think he's gotten, you know, a little bit.
That's sort of Dynamite, yeah.
Yeah, so I think he's got to be a little careful. Because even his last rap on, I think it was Elevation, the one where he talked about, like, Bryan Danielson, and he made fun of Brie Bella's show, and he made fun of Johnny Laurinaitis. Even that one was a good one. This one was like a. It was a 6 out of 10, maybe.
I think you're being generous. I thought it was like it was the worst one I've seen him do. I just at the end I was like,
no, I've heard some worse ones than that one. So
really?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, so match gets underway. Of course, crowd's totally loving Jungle Boy. Bowens gets the early advantage, chops him, kicks him in the corner. They go to pick and pick. Bowens works over Jungle Boy on the outside in the pick and pick. Jungle Boy tried to get the snare trap at one point, but Caster distracted him, and he did a dive. Bowens got his swinging net breaker off the middle rope for a near fall, and Jungle Boy eventually got the snare trap on Bowens. Bowens tried to make the ropes, but he couldn't, so he had to actually tap out. So I like that. I like that he was trying to make the ropes, and it was just like, no, this is too painful. Even though they're pretty close, I can't do it. I got to tap. I thought it was a good match to, Jungle Boy. We all know he's in the tag match with Christian and Luchasaurus against the Elite and Adam Cole. Again, I like this. I mean, some people said, well, how does that really focus and push the match and stuff? I'm like, well, not literally in your face, I guess. But honestly, here's one of the guys that's wrestling at the pay-per-view. Here he is in a match. Like, I don't know. I thought it was fine to have stuff like this. I enjoyed it. I thought it got me totally ready to see him in the tag match.
Well, I mean, plus the fact, too, it was a good match. Like, you know, I'm just going to throw this out there right now. So, you know, when MJF mentioned the pillars of himself and Darby and Jungle Boy and Sammy Guevara, okay, I'm not going to disagree with that. But, like, Anthony Bowens is another guy that you need to look at. Like, he's really good. And, this was a good match between two of your young stars. And what do people complain about with other wrestling federations? Oh, you're putting all your old stars on, or these matches are all, we've seen this match like five weeks in a row. Okay, here's a match that's different. Oh, well, why is he wrestling? It's not pay-per-view related. I'm like, at this point, it's like, you know what? It was a good match. Just leave it alone at that. I know we're going to get into some of the shenanigans after the fact, but this is where it became sort of part of pushing of the pay-per-view. Right?
Yeah, exactly. After the match finished, Bobby Fish comes running down. He attacks Jungle Boy. Total surprise. The announcers were totally perplexed. They sold it. Where is this coming from? Which was good. Fish gets in there. He's doing the brutal knees, suplexes. And then eventually Christian Luchasaurus make the save, come out, and they run off Bobby Fish. So focusing on the team there at the end, but also setting some seeds there with Jungle Boy and Bobby Fish down the road.
Yep. No, I agree. Actually, and it's like when we get to the Young Bucks Cole promo, which is after this next segment, that's where it really starts to come into focus with the storyline. Because there was a bunch of stuff there that I was like, ooh, this could get interesting. So, I digress. Go ahead.
And some people were like, well, why are they doing this stuff with him and Bobby Fish and starting that off? You haven't got through the pay-per-view. It's like, no, but the pay-per-view is this weekend. It's going to be over. I like this. I seem to remember WCW doing this when I was younger, that even though pay-per-view or biggest shows were coming up, even a Clash of the Champions, there would always be teases of other things. It wouldn't be just one thing all the time. So I have no problem with stuff like that. Some people are like, oh, but it's a go-home show. What's that got to do with it? It's like, it doesn't matter. You know what? This is the thing about the go-home show argument, is that for almost everything that's happening at the pay-per-view, see, I think people are tainted by the way WWE does things, because they wait so last minute so that the go-home show is important, because most of the time leading into it, we know three matches and nothing else. Here at AEW, it's different. Everything was laid out before this show. We know all the stories. I don't think there was any reason for us to be hit over the head again this week, because everything's in place. What more can you add to Eddie Kingston and Punk than what they did this week? I thought it was perfect. It's like that story has been so strongly set. Everybody understands it. You don't need to do anything else. And I think that's why this show was the way it was, because so many of the matches have been set up. The stories are in place. You don't need to do anything. You just need little reminders. And that's what a lot of this show was. And that's why, to me, and with all due respect to all the people whose names start with the letter B on the SNME Facebook page, I thought this was a fantastic go-home show.
See, I'm gonna disagree with you slightly.
Stepping off the soapbox. Okay, go ahead.
No,
yeah,
I did like this show. I just felt as I thought that they did like, and I appreciate the fact that you're gonna try to do stuff beyond the pay-per-view, because guess what? On Wednesday there's another Dynamite. So totally get that. I just thought that it might have been a little too like, we'll get more into it and I'll point it out where it is. But like, to me, it just kind of fell flat as a go home show. That was my overall assessment.
I totally disagree. I feel that since everything was so strongly in place already, that this was almost like a nice breather. I didn't feel like stuff was being rammed down my throat for this weekend. I was like, hey, everything's in place. We can kind of breathe and we can just promote some of the people that are on the show, and we can do a little bit of setting up for the future. So, yeah, I saw it a little bit differently. Okay.
I am curious to see what Friday's going to look like, though.
Yeah, well, again, it should be, again, something like this. Like, it shouldn't be anything really consequential, just a few. It should, I mean, really, Rampage should almost just be the go-home show thing. Like, they're showing the go-home show after Rampage. Rampage should really just be that.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, so everything's in place. Okay, so leading on here, we have the vignette with the Hangman Page. And he said, last year, I had to watch as my friends were crowned tag team champs and world champion, and I stood in the distance and watched. And then it cuts to JR, and he says, Page has had a lot of heartbreak and setbacks. Excalibur says, you can only fall short so many times before it breaks you internally and breaks the fans' expectations of you. Taz said, people have been waiting a long time for this match. And then it finally cuts to the champion, Kenny Omega. He said, the truth is, I could never relate to you, Paige, and that's why the fans like you. They see more of themselves than I ever did. Paige, and then it goes back to Paige, and he says, at Full Gear, winning the world title, the thing I want more than anything in the world, I don't think anything could feel better. It goes back to Omega and says, I don't lose big matches. He goes, Hangman, you always lose big matches. You don't stand a chance. Again, to me, it's in there. It's in place. This is all you needed to this week. I thought this was fine.
Yeah, again, nice little vignette. To be honest with you, I know we're going to get into the contract signing. I really like that contract signing. So.
Yes. Well, but yeah, because it was like a actual, what you'd believe a contract signing to be. You know, no one got thrown through the table. No one got thrown out of the ring. Okay, so now it goes to Adam Cole and the Bucks here. They do a little promo. This is pretty funny. Nick says, how good it was to see Jungle Boy get his ass whooped. Cole said he wanted to specifically talk about that, and he introduced him to Bobby Fish. Bobby Fish came in, and Matt says, you don't have to do that. We know who Bobby is. But he said it really sarcastically, right? Matt said, but as the new guy, I want to make one thing clear. And he said, there is no dispute. Which, a little dig at NXT where Fish and Cole were part of the Undisputed Era. He goes, there's no dispute. He goes, this is the era of the elite, the era of the super click. And Matt says, if my good friend Adam Cole says you're cool, then we're cool. But again, he was saying it sarcastically. Cole said to Fish that he had an even better idea. He said, "About what about 2 days from now, you get a match with Jungle Boy and you can beat on him even more. But just leave us a little bit for Full Gear so we can finish the job." And Fish says, "I can do that." And Cole said, "I knew I could count on you." And Matt said, "Cutler, cut it. Let's get out of here." And they stopped filming and walked out. So it looks like Fish is going to take on Jungle Boy on Rampage on Friday. So one match there.
See, and here's the thing. Like, this is why the Jungle Boy Bowens with Bobby Fish coming in, and then this, like, that was a nice little wrap up to, like, the, you know, Bobby Fish is going to beat up Jungle Boy before the pay-per-view type of deal. So I dug that. And then the other thing I like too, and again, maybe this is just me reading into breadcrumbs too much, but like, the way that the Jacksons were talking to Bobby Fish, who is Adam Cole's friend. Plus the fact that, you know, I think there's going to, like, there's some seeds between Adam Cole and Kenny Omega. Like, you know, are we seeing, again, the very early stages of a potential, you know, super elite breakup? You know, and now that Bobby Fish is in AEW, you've got Cole, potentially Bobby Fish, you know, like, now Cole creates his own type of faction, and, you know, they sort of, you know, spawn off from there. So I'm really curious to see where this is going.
There's, you see, that's the great thing, is that all those things are there, and it's so many different directions you could go. And for us, the fan, we can't figure it out. That's what's so great about it.
Yeah, it makes it fun that you can't, like, we're not just like, oh, this is going to happen. No. It's like, well, it could, no, this could happen here, and this could happen here. Kyle O'Reilly could make a surprise appearance. You never know. Like, you know what I mean?
Exactly. So. Exactly. Okay, so after this, we have a recap of the Eddie Kingston stuff with Punk. They're showing highlights from what happened last week, mixed in with commentary from different people, like the earlier one with Paige and Omega. So we have Taz. He says Eddie's a fighter. He's bred to be a fighter. Nothing has ever come easy to him. Excalibur said, when Punk was a rising star in the indies, Eddie Kingston was just a trainee. And they showed footage of both guys in IWA Mid-South. And they're like, when they're both like,
oh, big time. Like, yeah,
super young, super young. And, you know, Excalibur talked about Kingston was just the guy carrying bags for people. And he said, that's not to belittle him, but that's where he was in the pecking order. And they showed some more highlights of Punk and Eddie from last week. Jim Ross said he likes Eddie's motivation. He says Punk needs to step away from brawling and out wrestle this man. He said he needs to get the win and get the hell out of there. And then they showed a little bit more footage from last week. So, again, to me, the Punk Eddie Kingston story has been so put in place by the promo stuff from last week that I don't think you needed a lot this week. I think it's in place and you don't need to really smash it over the head. It's, I think it's nice that you kind of don't really draw on it heavy this week because it builds the anticipation for the pay-per-view.
No disagreement there. And like the other good thing about it too, is that the only big thing that we've seen so far is the Inner Circle American Top Team. Everything else has been just kind of quick vignettes. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah, that's the thing. I kind of liked it because sometimes, like, you know, you could almost say maybe last week could have, to me, I think last week was the go home show because it was super promo heavy, but it also anchored everything in place. So this week, we can have a little bit more of a loose feeling and just kind of highlight some of the guys that will be on the show, but we can do other stuff as well. Like they did with this match. I mean, this was really just kind of a squash tossed in here, really has nothing to do with the pay-per-view. And that's the next match, which was Wheeler Yuta against Wardlow.
It wasn't really a match.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, a Chucky and Orange came out with Wheeler. Wheeler tried. He tried to do a drop kick right away, but, you know, of course, Wardlow doesn't go down. He tried to do some moves off the ropes. He slipped, and Wardlow just grabbed him, slammed him hard. He gave him 4 power bombs in a row. I couldn't tell if the crowd was cheering or jeering Wardlow. I couldn't tell if they liked it.
I think that, like, dude, that guy, he's getting some babyface reactions.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, I think you're right. When he does the turn on MJF, I think it's...
That's going to be so huge, man.
People are going to love it. Yeah, people are going to love it. So he gave him 4 power bombs in a row, and he held him up in the corner and dropped him. He dropped Wheeler right on his own knee and smacked him and pinned him. It was basically a squash. Chuck and Orange were looking after Wheeler, and then Blade and Isaiah Cassidy come running down. They attack the two of them, and then Hardy comes down. He uses the chair on Cassidy, and then he gives him the twist of fate, or twist of hate, as Excalibur called it. He gave him a twist of fate with the chair, and Orange actually sold it huge. That was the most intense selling I think I've seen from Orange. He was really playing it up big time, so... That was the aftermath of the match there. So that segment, I'll agree, didn't have much to do with pushing the pay-per-view, that's for sure.
And you know what? This is a stupid point, but I felt like it was so weird because when they introduced Yuta, right? They're like, and at whatever, 5'10", 199 pounds. And I'm like, you just couldn't give him the 1 pound. And say 200.
Yeah, 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 right. Yeah. You're
right.
Was that done
on purpose? Like, yeah. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
kind of weird. I didn't notice that, but you're right. That's, yeah.
You know, I mean, like, you know, it's a work. Just yeah, add the 1 pound. Right?
Well, that was, I kind of noticed that when Daniel Bryan came out at the beginning for his match, or sorry, Bryan Danielson came out for his match with Rocky Romero, and his weight was announced at, like, I don't know, 179 or something.
I'm just 180. Come on.
And, you know, even make him 200. Like, geez, you know. So, anyways. So after that, they go to break, they come back. And again, just a quick little reminder here with Punk and Kingston, we were taken backstage. The two of them are well separated from each other. They're trying to get each other, but they're well separated. There's wrestlers, there's referees. Sanjay Dutt was, you saw Sanjay Dutt in there, but they're separated. They're far, far away. Eddie tries to, at one point he acts like he's walking away and then he tries to run over there. But he just kind of stops and again, to me, that's all you needed because everything is already set in place.
You know what, though? That was also a neat way to do it. It wasn't like they were fighting and then they got split up. It's like the aftermath, right? I actually thought that was a clever way to, you know, have an interaction with them without actually having an interaction with them. So,
well, yeah, I thought it was great. It's like, they were backstage. Obviously, people noticed they were going to do something. So, but they kept them like they were really, really far apart. Like, they weren't close to each other.
No, but that's what I mean. I like that. I like the fact that it wasn't like they were like, you know, 10 feet away from each other. Right. They were like across the parking lot from each other, you know, just jawing away. So I actually dug that vignette.
Okay, so we go to the tag match next. Dante Martin with his new manager, consultant, whatever, Leo Rush against Matt Sydal and Lee Moriarty. Dante Martin, you know, just it's so weird in this whole angle. He looks to me like he just wants to cry. Like, he just, the look on his face sometimes, you're just like, geez, guy, smile once in a while.
And again, maybe that's because he's like still relatively new, but his facial expressions are not—they're not well defined yet, right?
Mm-mm, so, like, not
is
at
he,
all.
Like, is he like there? There was one point in this match where I kind of got it, where like, and I know I'm jumping ahead here, but there was one point where all four of them got in the ring for a second, then they started brawling, and Dante for a second had this like killer look on his face. And I'm like, that's what we're looking for. But then right after that, it went back to, oh, it looks like he's going to cry again. So I was like, you know what
Very
I mean?
Bizarre.
It's like,
yeah.
You know, because until he fixes that, I can't get into this story.
Me too. I'm just like, you know, Leo Rush is trying to do all this stuff to help him. And you look at Dante Martin, it looks like he doesn't care. He wants to cry. He looks like, show some enthusiasm, something. So, anyways, Dante and Moriarty, they start off the match. They're doing a lot of wrist lock, joint wrestling. Kind of the idea the two guys were similar, going back and forth, getting out of each other's spots.
It was good. Like that beginning segment was pretty neat.
Yeah. There was lots of neat pinning attempts. Crowd was into it. Leo Rush and Matt get in there, and then Leo tries to outrun him. But Matt catches him with a kick, but then he missed a standing moonsault.
Dude, I forgot how good and how fast Leo Rush is. Like, it's been a while since I've seen him in the ring.
He
did some, like, sweeping kicks and stuff, and I was like, holy shit. Like, I don't remember this at all.
Yeah. They went to pick and pick. I was the same. I just thought all the guys worked together really well.
Moriarty, by the way, I am so impressed with that guy.
Yeah, he hung with them no problem, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to run through the whole match. There was so much stuff going on in this. They gave Leo Rush quite a bit in this, I think, because we probably really haven't seen him in a match.
But he got a ton in this match, man.
He was in there more than Dante, right?
It felt like it because I think he definitely got more offense in than Dante did, for sure.
But again, crowd loved it. They did the "This is awesome" chant. They did an AEW chant. So Moriarty did a suplex with Martin and then did a running knee for a near fall. And the finish was Leo called to Dante for the finish. He let him get the tag. He did the finish. He did the moonsault up the top rope and got the pin. So it was Dante and Leo Rush winning that match.
Yeah, that. So the sad part about this match, though, is that like it was from a in-ring perspective, it was very good. From a like sort of story perspective, I really don't care yet about right. this.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah,
like,
same here. I'm cold on it too because
yeah.
And it is mostly about what we just talked about, the Dante Martin factor. It's like Leo Rush is playing this conniving character, and you can tell he's kind of slimy. And that, and Dante is just like, he's not looking happy. He kind of looks sad, although I'm not sure what he feels.
Like, yeah, like just... that's exactly it right there, what you just said. I don't know what he feels. So because I don't know what he feels, I'm confused yeah. about the storyline, right?
Right, me too. So. Okay. So yeah, right from this, we go into another match.
Okay, this we were not confused about.
Oh boy. Well, again, and again, this was another match. You know, people might say, well, what does this have to do for the go home? It's like, well, it shows off, you know, Dax, who's in one of the matches on the pay-per-view. He's in the title match. And it moves ahead this storyline with Pac and all these guys. So, and plus, it's two guys where you're like, yeah, I want to see those guys wrestle. So this was pretty good.
Wait, hold on. Wasn't there the Miro vignette before this?
Oh, was there?
Yeah, there was a Miro vignette right after the...
You know what? I missed that. I don't
have okay. I don't have a ton of notes. It was a short vignette, but basically the gist of the vignette, and it was very good, by the way.
I can't believe I missed
the Miro. It was he basically said, like, I need to win this tournament. I need to put the world title over my shoulder. Those were the two key lines in this vignette. But it was obviously also about, like, you know, hey, God, is this you helping me, or is this you, like, you know, taunting me kind of thing, right? Because he's now in the tournament. So it was a really good vignette. I just wanted to mention that, like, I'm surprised you missed it because it was very good.
Yeah, how did I miss that? Holy cow. So that was right before the
– Right the before the pack match? Yeah, before the pack stacks match. That? So –
Miro, that's a drag. Okay, I'll have to go back and watch.
But it was very good. And again, the three lines that I was impressed with was, God, is this you helping me or haunting me, or something like that. And then, I need to win the tournament. I need to put the world title over my shoulder. And that was it. It was like literally a 2-minute promo, and but it was just really well done.
See, and again, that's for that match. That match is already cemented. Like, you know who the two guys are. You already know you want to see. You don't need to ram it down people's throats.
Actually, you know what I've liked about that build too? Outside of the one show, I think it was when Miro beat Orange, when Bryan Danielson came out and tried to shake his hand, they have not done, like, that's the only time they've been face to face in this entire thing. I love that.
Right. Okay, so let's get into this match then here. Dax Harwood against Pac. Tully comes out with Dax, but no Cash. And we're told that all the other wrestlers have been banned from ringside. So that's why we don't see Cash. We don't see the Lucha Brothers. Everybody else has been banned from ringside. But Tully, because he's a licensed manager.
Manager, yeah. They explain that well.
Yeah. The commentators explain that. Oh, I don't know if you caught this, but when they were walking down the ramp to the ring, Dax did a great old school heel spot.
Oh, yeah.
There's a space between the ramp that they're walking down and the barrier where the fans are. And there's this little kid reaching out that wants like a high five from Dax. And Dax reaches all the way over. And then right as he's about to do it, he pulls back and the kid gets burned.
I thought that was classic heel hilarious, man. I was like, oh, bastard.
I was dying. I was like, that's so good. So match gets started. Again, these guys were going heavy with the wrist locks off the top as well. And Dax with the headlocks trying to keep Pac grounded. You know, and this is another one where I think they were trying to show the two guys are evenly
crazy
matched.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah. Big time. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it was, you know, It was like they're calling each other out. You know, they do a bunch of crazy forearms. Pack did the German, the clothesline, sends Dax to the outside. Pack hits the somersault dive, and then they go to pick and pick. They brawled on the outside during the break. Pack gave him a back body drop on the ramp. And then they went back to the ring, and the ref started to count. Dax, this was great. Dax is crawling back while the referee's counting until he's, like, cheering him on. Until he's, like, come on, man, come on. Dax goes Spartan.
Tully is so good, man.
He knows what to do. He's been there. He knows what to do. Dax got a spine buster in the pick and pick for a near fall. This, you know, a lot of times with pick and pick, like when they go pick and pick in the women's match or some of the other ones, I don't really care and I fast forward. But you know what? I watched the entire pick and pick with this one
because I paid attention too. Yeah,
I'm like, sure. It's Dax and Pac. I'm like, and they did. There was a lot of good stuff in the pick and pick. So they come back from commercial, they're battling on the top rope. Pack gives Dax that crazy brain buster.
Oh yeah, wow,
that was insane. And thankfully, they had a camera above, yeah. And they had different angles from the ring. And I'm like, so they could really show you. But what a crazy spot!
That did look pretty. Like, I mean, I'm glad everyone's okay, but that looked pretty dangerous, man. I thought Dax landed wrong at first.
But it was great because they really sold how intense it was, because even though Pac did it, he couldn't get to Dax to do a cover. He took so much out of him, and by the time he got to Dax and tried to cover him, Dax had enough time to try to kick out. I'm like, that's really cool the way you did that.
For sure.
Crowds chanting, this is awesome at this point. Pac did a bad dropkick off the top into the back of Dax, but again, was slow to capitalize, couldn't get a pin. Pack got him in the corner with a couple of kicks, and then he went for another kick. And Tully actually moved Dax out of the corner, and then Dax was able to give him a brain buster, but Pack kicked out of that. Dax gave him the side suplex off the top, went for a clothesline, but Pack ducked and then gave him a German. Dax hit the big lariat, and then the rebounding off the rope. He rebounds him and does like the Liger bomb. Pack kicks out of that. Crowd's going wild. They're doing the AEW chant.
Actually, this crowd overall was actually one of the hotter crowds that they've had.
They were very good. Yeah, they were really enjoying it. Yeah. Pack went for the submission on the shoulder because Dax's one shoulder was all taped up. And Dax tapped immediately, like right away, to show that that's the bad shoulder, it hurts. So he tapped right away, and then Pack wouldn't relent, and then Cash comes running out because the match is over, so these guys can come out now. Cash hits the ring right away, immediately goes after Pack. He beats him down. Dexter Lumis hits the switch, and this one took a while. It seemed to be
Was a long one, man. Like, yeah, really long.
Like, even the announcers were kind of like, I don't know what's going on here. They came back, Andrade and Malakai Black were there, and they start beating on Pac. FTR join in as well. And then the Lucha Brothers and the Cody Rhodes, they all run down. They hit the ring. So it just kind of turns into a big brawl. I guess they had to get Cody and Malakai in there somewhere. But I don't know. I would have liked it better if it had just been the Lucha Brothers and it had kind of stayed with just that particular match rather than dragging the other stuff in. But there you go.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Let's go back to something that you originally said, where people were saying that, you know, why have this match, you know, if it's not sort of part of the pay-per-view type of deal, right? But the thing is, to me, I would argue that this was like had some pay-per-view ramifications.
Totally think
forget the fact that it set up a match on the card. But what you had is you had the friend or stablemate or whatever you want to call him of the Death Triangle, who, by the way, happened to just be the AEW tag champs, versus one of their challengers. You know what I mean? Like, to me, this had more pay-per-view ramifications than say Bryan Danielson versus Rocky Romero, right, with all due respect. Right. Yep. Right. So this match I got, like, it wasn't a problem with me. I just like, but yeah, this match was insanely good, man. You know what I mean? And it was just two guys that, like, they're just like, I can imagine what that conversation is like in the dressing room. It's like, just don't hit me in the mouth, but hit me as hard as you can. Got it. All right, we're good. Let's go.
Done. You know what I mean? Done. Yeah.
And oh, and sorry, like, the other thing I wanted to say too, and we mentioned this before in another match that had this same stip, love the fact that you didn't have, say, Cash try to come in and sneak, like, some interference in during the match. After the match, after Dax tapped out, then Cash came in, no problem. But during the match, nobody came out. Was totally happy with that.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so after this, they did the quick rundown. What's going to be on Rampage on Friday. So, yes, Jungle Boy against Bobby Fish. Orange Cassidy is going to take on Matt Hardy in a lumberjack match. And they talked about how there's going to be the Countdown to Full Gear show after Rampage as well. They revealed that the buy-in match on the pre-show before the pay-per-view will be a women's tag with Nyla Rose and Jamie Hayter against Thunder Rosa and Joe, wait for it, Sheeta!
I do love me some Sheeta. And quite frankly, I do love me some Thunder Rose and Jamie Hayter as well.
What a team. What a team, like, though. Eh? Thunder Rosa and Sheeta. I'm like, whoa, what a team.
Here's the scary part about this is that I'm actually more interested in that women's match than I am, like, with Britt Baker versus Ty Conti.
Yeah, there you go.
And I have to, like, I know people, like, I've said this on the board a lot about, like, why do I keep seeing Ty Conti on my TV? Okay, just to get this out of the way. I like Ty Conti. I like Anna Jay. I like Bunny. I like Penelope Ford. I have no problems with any of these women, except the fact that they've been on my television 6 weeks in a row.
Yeah,
that's my problem with it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's it. So, like, I'm getting kind of burned out on them. Now, look, I get that they're over. Like, Ty Conti is over. Anna Jay is over. I get it. But I think some of these other women could get over if you put them on TV six weeks in a row.
Right? I agree. Okay. So after this, they ran down the pay-per-view. And this is where it really hit me, where I'm like, this show's loaded. Amazing. First off, CM Punk versus Eddie Kingston should be fantastic. Miro versus Bryan Danielson in the finals of the tournament
should be fantastic.
They'll kick the shit out of each other. The Inner Circle against America's Top Team, 10-man Minneapolis street fight. I'm sure this will have comedy and stuff in it, but I think it'll be a very entertaining match. Britt Baker defending against Ty Conti. The Lucha Brothers against FTR will be off the charts. The Bucks and Adam Cole against Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Christian should be amazing. And I'm very intrigued by Darby versus MJF.
I think that'll be a good match too. Both guys can go, man.
And it's also, I'm intrigued because it's really the very first MJF singles program.
Yes.
And I'm intrigued by that, to see how it goes. If it ends here, continues, I'm curious. And plus, Darby, right? Like, these are two of the pillars, like you say, right? So this is very interesting to see how that one's going to be booked.
Well, I guess in this match, we'll find out who's the Misawa and who's the Kawada.
Yeah, so. There you go. So if one of them breaks their wrist, they're the Kawada. So after this, they did a vignette actually to push Darby and MJF. Again, one with a bunch of different people in it. Excalibur says, MJF doesn't often speak the truth, but when he named the four pillars of AEW, Jungle Boy, Sammy Guevara, Darby, and himself, those are homegrown stars in AEW. They represent the next wave and future champions. JR says, MJF is a fortune teller. You have to go beyond the talking. Tony says, MJF thinks there's only room for himself at the top, and that is one of the reasons he's trying to push Darby down. Taz says Darby Allin is a violent thinker, but highly intelligent. MJF says Darby was good at checkers, but he plays chess. JR said, nobody has the heart and passion that Darby has. MJF said, I've got so far into his mind that he won't be focused on anything except for hurting me when he should be focused on beating me. And then Darby gets the last say, and he said, you could wrestle circles around him if he wanted, so go ahead, try and beat me.
You know what? I'm glad, like, we talked about this last week. I am glad that this is all they did, because, like, last week they went crazy with that yes. sort of pull-apart thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, again, for this week, this was all you needed. Like, again, with this, it's set. Everything's been set. This is all you needed. It was good.
Yeah. Oh, also, I'm going to throw this out there, because it kind of came up in the Facebook chat yesterday, but like, when they talk about the pillars, man, they got to throw Britt Baker in there as well. She's like one of the pillars for this company,
right?
You know, and I, you know what, we were talking about this off podcast, so I'm going to throw this back at you. What's the bathroom match on this pay per view?
Well, that's it. It's freaking hard. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, it's really, really hard. I mean, I don't want to say Britt Baker, but when I look at the chart, I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
Like, if I had to pick, and I mean this with nothing but love and respect, it would either be the Britt Baker match or the Inner Circle American Top Team match.
Right.
Mainly because it's a gimmick match, and I'm not the biggest gimmick match fan. But, like, yeah, like, I mean, I think, I'm going to eat and go to the bathroom early, and so I don't have any distractions, because this is a stacked effing card.
It is. Really, that's the thing. It's got potential to be show of the year.
Yep. Including the pre-show match. You know what I mean? Like, that is I would argue that that's probably one of the strongest pre-show matches we've seen for any AEW pay-per-view.
And after all this, they did add yet another match to the show.
Yes, they did.
Coming out of what we saw. So it's going to be Pac and Cody Rhodes against Malakai Black and Andrade El Idolo. So that match has been added as well.
Pac and you know what? Like,
Rhodes, what a team.
Yeah, like, but here's the thing. Despite what people may, you know, I know Cody is somewhat of a polarizing figure with a lot of wrestling fans, but that match, at least in ring, I expect that match to be a very good in-ring match.
Yeah. Okay, so this led us to the final segment of the show, which was the contract signing between Kenny Omega and Hangman Page. This was preceded over by Tony, of course. Both the Elite and the Dark Order have been banned from ringside. And they actually showed them leaving the building. They didn't just show them ushered backstage. They showed them leaving the building.
And you said, was it Brandon Cutler with a little bit of comedy? Because he was the one, like, dropping all the bags and stuff.
I think it was. Yeah. So it's in the ring. Tony's there. There's a big long table with two chairs at the end. Tony's got the contract. He brings out Hangman Page first, who gets a huge reaction. He shakes hands with Tony, but he doesn't sit down. He's kind of restless. After this, Tony brings out Omega, and Tony's like, once Omega gets out there and he's in the ring, he's got his purple suit on. He said, Tony said, the challenger should sign first, and right away the crowd's chanting cowboy shit, while he's getting ready to sign. And Paige says, he goes, well, you know, after all this time, I don't know what's left to say. He goes, the sooner I sign this, the sooner I get to full gear and I beat your ass for the title. And that was it. He signed it. So he gives it back to Tony. Tony gives it to Kenny. The cowboy shit chant starts up again. Omega goes to sign it, but of course grabs the microphone. He said to the crowd, I wish I could share your excitement and enthusiasm. So, of course, you know, he's being sarcastic and they're booing him. He goes, but I'm a little sad, actually. He goes, we were friends and partners, and in the Elite, we were family. He goes, you see all this. You go, everything here was meant for you. If it wasn't for your insecurities and failures. And the crowd starts to boo Kenny. And he looks at them and goes, you guys love that cowboy spirit. He goes, but Paige himself said that when you fall off the horse, you get right back in the saddle. And he said, I wish the cameras could see how it really was. He goes, it was never you. It was always us that picked you up out of your sorrows every time, sat you back on that horse and give these people what they thought they wanted, which was cowboy shit.
And I thought that was actually a very strong part, because you could almost argue the way that they wrote this, that was not that was true. Paige was the one that was kind of, getting down on himself, and it was always the Bucks. This is when the Bucks and Omega were baby faces. You know what I mean? So when he's saying that, I'm like, Kenny's not lying here. It's the way he's saying it that makes him a dick. But he wasn't lying at all when he said all that stuff. I thought that was kind of a nice little nice little edge or layer to that promo.
Well, sure, exactly. I mean, it's like, hey, man, yeah, you say that, but at the same time, man, you were down in the dumps, and we picked you up every time.
Absolutely.
So he says, why did I do that? He goes, even after you walked away and turned us down, we invited you back. He goes, call me crazy, but I did it because I saw a little bit of me in you. And he goes, how wrong I was. What a disappointment. So Paige, it's his turn to speak again, and he said, you talk a lot about me choking and my failures and insecurities, and maybe you're right. He goes, but I remember, you had a tag team partner you felt you didn't measure up to either. And that, of course, got everybody like humming and hawing, and everyone in the audience is like,
Yeah.
Right? The whole thing with Ibushi, right? The whole tease of Ibushi there, because when they were him and Omega were a tag team in New Japan. Paige continues though and says, but I look across the ring and I see you now, the best bout machine, the wrestling god, the man who's been the AEW champ for almost a year. He said, it might be fair to say you surpassed me. He goes, over the years you told me a lot of lies, like I wasn't good enough or beat you and you let me fall flat on my face. He goes, but the biggest lie you told me was last year at Full Gear in the Elimination Tournament when you beat me and you kneeled over my body and said, good job, Hanger. I'm proud of you. He said, you weren't proud of me. You were afraid of me. You didn't want me to feel the pain of loss like you had before. You didn't want to light a fire under my ass to redeem myself. You didn't want me to become what you've become and what I will become this Saturday when I beat you and become the AEW World Champion. That was cool. I enjoyed that part there. And then Omega says, no, you got it all wrong. He goes, what I did out of necessity. And because, believe it or not, I care about you. He goes, I wanted to be the guy on the other side of this table right now so I could show you your potential. He said, can we be friends again? Well, who knows? But one thing is for sure. I want to shake your hand right here, right now, one last time. Crowds, totally frantic, totally worked up. Omega's like, let's kill it at the pay-per-view, man to man. And they actually shook hands. And then Kenny said, good job, Hangman. I'm proud of you. Which I'm like, whoa. And so Omega leaves. And then there was this weird shot when they were going for the handshake where this one cameraman kind of comes into the frame and moves over to the side. And you see this camera. And so after they shake and Omega's left, this one cameraman just runs up the page and corks him with the camera. And he takes off his mask, and it's Don Callis. And we haven't seen Callis in quite a long time, so this was a great way to bring him back here.
Big time, dude. Big time.
Really good. Here, there he is. There's the heel manager. And the best part, did you catch this? He had a face mask on as the cameraman, and underneath the face mask, he had a fake mustache and a fake beard.
That was awesome.
He didn't even need it. He didn't even need it because he's got the mask. And I'm like, oh, my God. That is so funny. That was great. Really funny. Great way to put comedy in. So at this point, Kenny's freaking out. He's screaming at Paige. I had to do this. It's a necessity. I loved you. I did this because I love you. And he's like, don't you get it? And then Callis, of course, gets the microphone. And this was a great line. He said, Callis, Callis said, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was to make the world forget he existed. And he's like, for 6 weeks, I've been hiding in my basement. And I'm like, oh, so good. You did. You got to the point where people just kind of forgot about you.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So, Paige doing color off the camera, getting hit in the head. So he's busted open. He's bleeding. Callis says, does this look like someone ready to win the world title? And Kenny, this was great. So sadistic, so heel. Kenny was dipping his finger in Hangman's blood, and he signed the contract with his finger and the blood.
I dug that little nuance there. So.
Brilliant. And then they just picked up Paige and they threw him on the ground, and that the show went to black. And I'm like, wow, great, great contract signing. Really effective. Made Kenny and Dallas just look like Callis looked like the most evil, dastardly guys.
There was some serious heat from that big time.
Crowd was going wild. So there you go.
Before you move forward on that, did you notice that both guys were sitting at the head of the table?
Yes. Yes.
Normally, when you see a lot of contract signings, everyone is sitting on the long side of the table. Right. So I'm wondering if this was a dig at Roman Reigns, you know,
cause it might have been.
Then, so I thought that was kind of neat where they were both sitting like at the far ends. Cause normally you don't see that.
I would hope that it's just, they went, okay, it's a different visual. Like it's,
I hope so. But it's like, just a the, different like g- given the way these guys do a lot of inside sort of, you know, jabs at WWE, I wouldn't be shocked by that, but it was something I noticed like right away when I saw it. I thought it was neat. I wanted to point attention out to it. That's all.
So as I've made clear throughout the podcast, I thought this was a good go home show. I don't think the go home show has to hit you over the head. I just feel that WWE has made fans think like that because so often it does have to hit you over the head in their case, because they've hardly got any of the card figured out yet, and they've got to figure out ways to get you to watch at the last minute. In this case, AEW's done a great job of building up pretty well every single one of these matches on this card. And I really like the way it, like, you had little bits and promos to reinforce things, but nothing hits you over the head. And I like the way it kind of actually pulled back a little bit and just gave us some cool wrestling and wasn't promo heavy. I really enjoyed it. And I'm totally just as psyched for the pay-per-view, I think, if it had all been rammed down my throat. So I thought it was a good show. And for those of you whose names start with the letter B, I thought it was a good show.
No, I mean, I see your point. I think my issue with the show, like I like the fact that they didn't hit us over the head either. And the ones that did hit us over the head, and I use that with, like, I'm air quoting that, but they were your big matches. They were your world title match where you actually had a match, right? They were your like the contract signing and then the American top team beatdown. But I think what for me, what hurt the show wasn't so much the wrestling. It was like the matches, like the whole. And again, this is now my own personal thing. The whole Matt Hardy, Orange Cassidy thing. I was like, I'm done with that. Like, so that actually turned me off the show a lot. But the other one that kind of bothered me was like, Could we have not put Lio Rush, Dante Martin on another show and maybe put like another Pac versus Dax type of match in this show? You know what I mean? Like those two matches for me were kind of like, what is going on here? And that, like, honestly, that, like, thank God for the contract signing, because I've like that sort of brought me back into the show. But like some of those matches kind of took me out of the show.
Right.
For a go home show, I was cool with the vignettes. I'm glad that they didn't go crazy with MJF Darby, for example. I'm glad that they didn't go crazy with Miro, you know, CM Punk, all that fun stuff. Everything was tastefully done, but I just didn't like some of the match selections. And I think that's what bugged me about this show.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I thought the show was strong where it needed to be. The Lambert ATT thing with Inner Circle was really well done.
Dude, I cannot tell you how much I've turned the corner on Lambert, because I hated him before, man.
Yeah, me too. He's, you know, and the thing is that I'm loving him in this more physical thing rather than his talking. Like, I'm just like, he just is so great at playing a cowardly dick. And that's exactly what you want out of his character.
And again, so, he can't do any of the moves, which makes it even that much better, right?
Oh, yeah, you can imagine when he gets tagged, he's going to go in and do, like, the worst-looking leg drop or elbow.
Yeah, or an elbow drop.
And he's going to do something that's just going to look horrible. And they'll play it up big time, and then he'll get tagged out. And, you know, like, they've got to get a couple – they've got to get at least one or two spots early in the match where he gets to do total shit. Yeah. And the other guys protect him, and he's like, "Well, I'm great. Like, it'll be hilarious."
Oh, yeah. And he's got to do a strut. Like, he's got to do some sort of Fargo strut or something, right? Well,
he'll do that. Exactly. Jackie Fargo. He will totally. Yes. You know what? You're totally right. Lambert doing strut would be hilarious.
And you know what's scary about that match? And I know we'll preview this on the Friday show after Rampage, but like, the scary part about this match is that even though I'm pretty confident that the Inner Circle are going to get their comeuppance, I would not at all be shocked if Dan Lambert actually got that pin. You know what I mean? Like, the way that they've been building it, like is that, like, it's not 100% slam dunk kind of thing. Like, you could argue that, yeah, you know what? They could win. Like, they could figure it out, right?
I think they will tease the Lambert pinning Jericho. I think it's going to get, I think he'll actually get a couple near falls.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I agree. But still, like, I wouldn't be shocked if it happened. Let's just put it that way. So
it's going to be interesting for sure. The ratings, did you want to take a quick look? Cause you have the numbers. Do you not?
Yes, actually they came out while we were recording. So, AEW did, they came back up from last week, because I think they were like 878,000. This week they did 913,000, and they did 0.35 in the demo, which was they're ranked third, but it was actually tied with the NBA. But the NBA had more total viewers, which is why they are that's why they're third instead of, you know, tied for second, I guess. So not a bad night. Again, they're trending back in the right direction. You know, their second Wednesday back, you know, on TV. So hopefully this means that, you know, they'll continue back on their upward trend. Hopefully they get back to that million mark, which, you know, that's where they were kind of averaging before they moved to the two Saturday nights. So yeah, it was not a bad rating night at all. And again, like, solid show from last night, you know, for the go home show. So that's sort of the quick and dirty on the ratings.
Now, so Joe and I will be back on right after Rampage on Friday. We will do a podcast and then we'll give our predictions for the pay-per-view. In fact, I'm hoping to actually talk more about our thoughts leading into the pay-per-view, because I don't expect a lot is going to happen on Rampage. I'm suspecting we'll be able to go through it pretty quickly. And then we'll get into it and we'll give our predictions and thoughts and where we think things are going, because there, as we've talked about in this podcast, there are several ways things could go here. So we'll sit down and speculate after what we've seen on Friday and see if at least if we can't figure it out, come up with some interesting ideas.
Absolutely. And then of course on Saturday, for anyone who's part of our Patreon group, we're on the after party show on Saturday with Mr. Mark Andrada. So always looking forward to doing that.
Yes, I will be double teamed by Filipino positivity here on Saturday. Yeah. Jay will not be joining us, but yeah, Joe and I will host. And for those of you that aren't Patreons right now and you're listening to this show for free and you want to be part of that, subscribe and you can join us on Sunday night. It's always fun. I think it's going to be particularly fun after this one, because AEW does get people excited and I'm sure we'll probably get quite a few responses. So yeah, Patreons, get ready, because we're going to go at it after the pay-per-view finishes on Saturday, no matter how late.
Hopefully it won't be like crazy late.
No, but I noticed on my television guide that it's marked down from 8 till 12:30. So
yeah, I mean, like I'm just looking at the card right now, and like if you don't include the like the pre-show match, there's like 9 matches on this thing. So
exactly,
and all of them you could argue should get at least 12 minutes, if not longer.
That's the thing. So a few of them you want a bit more, right?
Yeah, like, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Do so.
But yeah, well, you know what? We'll talk all about that on Friday. We'll talk more.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Cool. Time for the old guys to put it to bed. But as always, thanks everybody for listening.
Top guys out.
So there you have it. That podcast can be delivered to you each and every week right into your inbox, along with all of our other podcasts from Sunday night's main event. We're not just on Sunday nights. We're on each and every day, and you can listen on demand. And along with our wrestling podcast, we also add in a weekly 3-hour trivia show that I host on terrestrial radio across Canada. And we also add in Dan the Mouth Lavransky. Well, he loves two things in life. One is wrestling and the other is music. So we have Dr. Mouth's Rock and Roll Lunch Party for you each and every week as well. Because you know what, guys? There's more to life than wrestling. For all of these podcasts, sign up at patreon.com/snmeradio. Only $1 a week. Hey, it's a pretty good deal. Patreon.com/snmeradio. Don't you dare miss it.